Millions of people want to invest in property, but the problem is a lot of the time it's too much work, it's too much hassle, and they really don't know how to do it. And that's why in today's episode, we'll cover how you can become a passive property investor by investing in mobile home parks and private lending, and how you can make property investing work for you. Ian Noble will tell us how to do this, and he is the founder of Run Steady Investments, and he brings with him the experience of owning a small business in Austin, Texas, consisting of 14 locations and over 90 employees. And after 14 years, he successfully exited the service industry business in 2023. And now his sole focus is on helping people passively invest in real estate with mobile home parks and private lending funds. So, Ian, tell us about how can someone invest in property and passively?
Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu. Mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
Yeah, Lily, thank you for having me. That's a great question. A lot of people, there's a lot of hype out there about passive income and what it can look like for investors. The main reason, at the fundamental level, you can invest passively in these things to where you're not running the day-to-day, but somebody is. So make no mistake, this isn't an operation that runs by itself, but we've set it up in a way to where the investor that has the money, but not the time, or maybe not the energy to invest into real estate, can park their capital and participate in ownership, but not have to deal with the day-to-day headaches, real estate and running that business and dealing with tenants and leaks and turnover, all these things that we deal with in the industry. That's why it's a perfect solution for people that are looking for, I'll call it the easy button, but there's a lot of work that happens behind the scenes.
Thank you. I'm actually personally interested in investing in mobile home parks because I have noticed that the returns can be really very, very exciting. So tell us first about the difference between someone investing in mobile home parks and doing it themselves versus someone who would work with you, for example, and invest in mobile home parks and have the hassle and the toilets and the nightmares taken away from them.
Yeah, there's a massive difference. So operationally, mobile home parks, you have many complications or difficulties like you would with managing any sort of asset class, but you have collections and infill, which means putting more homes or more tenants into the property. There's ways to set this up to where it's a lot easier, but the best way on the passive side, we like to educate, you know, all of our passive investors, make sure they feel like partners and continue to somewhat teach them, even if they don't want to know about it, to see what we're doing and how, you know, how this operation works. So part of what we do is making sure that everybody knows, you know, what our expenses look like, what we're doing to improve the park. These are all things that an owner would want to know, or in any business capacity, let's say it was a company, you'd want all these metrics as well. But at the end of the day, you don't want to be dealing with the problems that come with it. So if you, for example, have your main income source and all your time is allocated towards that, well, if you wanted to go manage your own property, by all means you could, but it takes a lot to get into that. You have to deal with acquisitions and hunting deals and underwriting, then property management, all these that come along with running these style businesses, where it's really designed for people that's their main focus. Because if you put half your time into it, you will have a poorly run property. So for us, we look to partner. I'm a passive investor as well. I look to partner with operators that are the best in class and the best in the business, that they do it full time. And they have full teams. We leverage their teams, their experience. And what our job is, we will bring the capital, the money as a group, and get to, you know, get that deal done and get to participate in all the things that's, you know, beautiful about real estate: the depreciation, the tax benefits, the cash flow, the write-offs. These are the things, and the upside, hopefully. So these are all the things that I like to share that, you know, for people, again, have the money but don't have the time.
Thank you. What's the minimum required for someone to invest in a mobile home park?
For what I do, and most of what you'll see these syndications out there, it's $50,000. So we're dealing, the majority of the investors are accredited investors, meaning they meet certain income thresholds or net worth thresholds. And 50,000 is generally the buy-in. You will see them go up depending on project size or the operator, but that is a good, you know, number for people to keep in mind. And when they do so, that's a partnership. You plan on putting your money, just like if you were to buy a property, that generally could be a 3, 5, 7, 10 year partnership where your money is in that project. Now, there's ways that we can get it out sooner. The most common ones through a refinance, but it's not something that if you have $50,000 to invest and you are an accredited investor, which means you're allowed to participate, if you think that you're going to need that money next year or later in the year, then these aren't for you. This is something to where these are long-term investments because what I focus on specifically is the low-risk stable assets. There's lots of fun stuff out there in real estate, but I'm the boring guy that just keeps it low risk and looks long-term.
Thank you. So what would be the potential return range for someone who wants to operate a mobile home park by himself? And what would be the difference from that to a passive investor that would be working, let's say, with a person like you to have everything handled and just to receive the returns without doing anything?
Sure. Well, your returns will be higher if you're running this yourself. And so with passive investing, you are putting your money in advance to share profits. I'll give you two scenarios though. If you're an active owner and you're managing this property yourself, if you're a good operator, they can keep their expense ratio down to like 30, 45%. 45 is kind of creeping up there a little too high. But depending on how you have the park set up, you can make a good living. The industry though, many people, it's very fragmented. They're geographically separated across the US. And so it's difficult to scale. So again, you can always in anything, in my opinion, make the most money if you are doing it yourself and you have the time and expertise to do so. On the flip side, if you're a passive investor, you're trading your time for money, you're leveraging other people's time. And generally the returns are what we see in the industry is what's called a preferred return. So this means this is what you're being promised are, you know, first X number of years until your investment, your initial capital is returned. Generally, we see that at 7, 8, sometimes 9%, which is a good return. But by no means, if people are comparing it to something else and they see, well, I'm getting a 20% return here, there's a lot more that goes into this, and I'll explain it in a moment. You're normally setting up with a preferred return, 7, 8, or 9%. Then the efforts for many, if they're not going to sell, is to refinance that property. When you refinance, you're assuming that you've increased the property value. The rent for the mobile home park has gone up. And essentially, you go to the bank and you say, here's what my property's worth today. Who decides that number? Well, the industry has standards and it's based on what's called a cap rate. So if we drive up our revenue and our net operating income, the park is worth more. We go to the bank and we show them that it's worth more. And then we basically take a loan out from the bank. The investor capital gets paid back, meaning the initial, let's say $50,000 that you put in goes back to you, plus that return that we were talking about, that 7, 8, or 9%. Well, what's cool here is you still own the property after you get the money back. So think of it as your risk being out, right? You've given all your money back, but now you're still an owner. You might own 1% of that property as a passive investor. You get to participate in the cash flow, although it will be lower at that point after the refinance. Your money's out. You can go use that money and recycle it somewhere else. So there's a velocity to this and being able to invest quicker in more places and have more passive income streams coming in. Later on, when it sells, there's upside, and you get to participate in that as well as being an owner.
Thank you. Tell us about investments you've made already, and give us three case studies of investments where they have panned out relatively well. And can you give us some numbers of how it panned out really well for you or for some of your investors?
Sure. Yeah, I'll talk first specifically on one that we had done this last year. It was right outside of Nashville, Tennessee. We partnered with a solid operator. And when you first get into these investments, again, there is a preferred return. This one we had done 8% for our investors. And I'm an investor too. That's criteria that we didn't discuss. I'm always investor number one. So my own money is in this alongside everybody else. So 8% return is, we're now, that one's just a year in about. So the money is paid through cash flow. And in your first year, cash flow is always going to be smaller because you're reinvesting back into the property, trying to drive up its value. So pretend that you get 3.5% or 4.5% cash flow. Well, you're still owed that accrued preferred return. So the difference, if we say, hey, you're getting 8%, Lily, well, you still are owed the difference and that doesn't go away. So I'll say that that's part of the yearly plan. Another benefit to this, and this is real life example, is the depreciation. We do what's called a cost segregation study. It will allocate all of the different parts of the property into different, I'll call in different terms or lifespans. So normally, if you own a home, if you look at your tax return, you'll see something called depreciation on there. It doesn't mean your home is losing value, but in the world of the IRS and the way taxes work, things lose value over time. That's called depreciation. What we can do is we can accelerate that. So we can front load it essentially to the first year. And this is a big benefit for people that have gone through a liquidity event or are looking for tax write-offs to offset other income that they may have. An example would be, these are exact numbers, I believe, $50,000 that went into that last fund. They got a K-1, which is a tax document, at like minus 48,000 and change. So what does that look like? Well, you're going to get a tax document showing a paper loss. This is a depreciation loss. And that minus 48,000, you didn't lose that money. You were able to take advantage of the tax code as it exists and then apply that to either offset it against other income that you have through rentals or real estate or other passive income. And in some circumstances, you can offset it against your own active income, like your main source of income. That's rare, but it's a possibility. So that's a way that performed right away. That's a year one thing that people can capture and take advantage of that you can't get from the stock market or many other investments. That is the most attractive year one return that you get from these things. So as it goes along, this is real life example. We continue to, you're getting quarterly cash flow distributions. You still are, per the contract, you're set at your 8% preferred return, meaning, hey, even if cash flow doesn't get us there in that first year or two, it's still owed when it's time to either refinance or sell that property. So these are guarantees. I'll say guarantees. Nothing is guaranteed in the world of investing, but this is the business plan and the model that you sign up for and that we implement as operators to say, look, investor comes first. You get paid first. That's what a preferred return is called. After you get your capital back, then we begin to split our profit for the life of that deal. And usually those profit shares, by the way, 70-30 is a very common number in the industry. 70% goes to the passive investor. 30% goes to the operator actually running the deal. So it's very much in favor of that passive investor. So think about it. You're not spending your time to do it to run the operations, but you're getting cash flow that comes in each year. You're getting a depreciation, which can help with your taxes. And you're getting a profit split for the life of that deal plus upside. I love it. I'm an active real estate investor and a passive real estate investor. And active just means I do it myself. And then passive means I let somebody else do it. And I can tell you there are a lot of benefits, especially when it comes to time freedom and all the reasons people want to get into real estate, to becoming a passive investor. But you got to be careful because there's a lot of hype out there. It's a people business. You have to find good partners. All of these things take a lot of time to, sort out before you go into partnership with somebody.
Thank you. Tell me how passive property investors leverage you and your team in order to get appreciation from the mobile parks. And I'm talking not only the cost segregation thing that you mentioned now. I'm talking about, is there a strategy that you leverage to add value to the mobile home parks so that yes, when they end up selling it, they profit bigger?
Yeah, great question. This industry is unique because you can have what's called tenant-owned homes. And tenant-owned homes means that you own the dirt underneath the manufactured house, but the resident actually owns the manufactured house. Some people call it a trailer, although many of them are not like that. So what's unique about this is when we go into these parks, we're not looking for major renovation products or projects. We're looking for parks that have pretty good occupancy, let's say 70% and up, to where we feel that there's some upside in what we can do. The immediate upside is the lot rent. Are they paying under market rents? And number two, is there an opportunity to infill, meaning put more residents onto the lots that are existing in that mobile home park? Because of how mobile home parks are valued, there generally we say it's about a 7 cap. That is a financial calculation or measure to show, based on the income that we bring in, how much the property is worth. Because they're valued on that, when you infill one home — this is our last project right outside of Nashville, Tennessee — for every home that we infill and get a resident in there, it increases the value anywhere between $60,000 and $80,000 on that park. So if you are to, I'll use the low end of that. If you were to get 10 residents in there and those spaces are there and available, you fill the 10 spaces, you're getting lot rent. So it's helping your cash flow for those 10 spaces. But now let's add $60,000 of value to that property times 10, it's $600,000. So you can force that equity and raise the property value by doing that. So it's all down to, just like running a business, to increasing your cash flow. But at the end of the day, we set these up to where we're looking for good communities. Sometimes there's a stigma in the industry about these being like run down trailer parks. I think that's just people that may not know. They certainly do exist, but as do those with, you know, single family homes and shopping centers and apartment complexes. There's run down everything. That's not what we're looking at. We're looking at good, community areas where there are families and children that are living there. These are working class Americans that, you know, looking for an affordable place to live. So I love the asset class itself, because there is a big opportunity for, number one, to provide that affordable housing, because homes are getting expensive, wages aren't increasing to the same degree that house prices are. And so it's a good way to fill that gap for even middle America and middle and down for those people that are working hard that just need an affordable place to live.
Thank you. How can passive property investors leverage mobile home park investing in the right way? And what I mean by that is, maybe some mobile home parks turn out to be a good investment and others turn out to be a bad investment. And what's the difference between both? Like, whether you've made a bad investment in the past, or perhaps you've seen other people make a bad investment, or you've simply said no to a potentially bad investment. What were those kind of like red flags that you noticed?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first thing is the real estate's a people business. And so for any sort of investment, whether you're investing into companies or real estate, it comes down to the people that are running it. So yes, the market can harm or make things perhaps better than what you anticipated. But for me, the red flags that I look for is, like, upfront, I'm looking for the right people to work with. And so I have learned through experience and over time what is good and what's not, and, you know, the type of character and individual that I look for. So often before the underwriting, and, you know, that's crucial, right? In every deal that will make or break it. But you can have good deals in underwriting, but you can have bad operators and the investment will not turn out well. So a lot of what I do and, you know, how I help our community of investors, these are people that I have relationships with that I've met through networking that I've then personally invested into. So I will put my own money into their deals first before I go out and raise money for these groups. Then I'll get to know these individuals, make sure that, you know, their communication style is good, that the project is performing as expected, or if they hit a bump in the road, how are they handling it? So it's all about that individual. Then once they perform, that's when I bring it back to our network of investors and say, listen, y'all, this is pre-vetted stuff. I know this individual, my own money is alongside it with you. Let's say it's $100,000. So this is a little bit different than somebody telling you, hey, this is a good idea, you should get into this, when they're looking for commissions or some sort of fee that they might capture. this is different. This is stuff that I'm proud of to be an investor in. You know, I tell my wife and you say, hey, this is what we're going to be doing. And I mentioned in the beginning, I'm a low risk guy. So I'm comfortable in the investing world, you know, playing it long term. I'll call it hitting singles, you know, making sure that these are safe and reliable investments, because the last thing you want to do is lose and start over. It's always a possibility in anything when people are investing. But I put a lot of effort into making sure that I reduce that risk as much as possible.
Thank you. What's the best due diligence tasks that any passive property investor should put in place to make sure they don't lose their money?
Ask a lot of questions and ask what you feel in your gut. I have noticed that a lot of investors, if they sometimes in the world of real estate, there are these figures that get tossed out to where people might be intimidated or think their question is stupid. These are all things that are real life. Number one, I would ask these questions. And make sure you feel comfortable in your gut with the person that's running it. If you feel pressured, or if you feel that this person doesn't have the best interest for me, there are hundreds of people that do this. You know, go find somebody else that you do feel comfortable with. What I have noticed, a lot of passive investors will find someone in their local community. So there are efforts to obviously advertise online and you know, put presence out there for these brands. But I would say a large concentration of investors feel most comfortable going with somebody in their local market, or just someone who they've been able to follow on podcast, or, you know, consume their information to where you can build trust in other ways if you're not in their market. And I'll share later. I have a guide for this that I helped create this, not help, I did create, that just kind of tells people what questions you should be asking. What's it like to be a passive investor? So we can cover that later, and happy to share that with all your readers.
Thank you. For people that want to operate their own mobile home parks, what are some costs that they haven't perhaps thought about that are going to occur?
Your biggest one is going to be in the infrastructure. So a lot of what you're responsible for is, think about the water and sewer. Ideal scenario, city takes care of the city water and the city sewer, and those are individually metered. They run up to the manufactured homes. It's not always so clean and cut and dry. So you have, some parks have septic systems, a bunch of them. You know, you really need to be comfortable taking that on. Some have like small private waste treatment facilities. Those can get very expensive to replace. So you'll want to look for, if you're a new investor, by all means, you can do it, especially if you have, you know, the stomach to take on some of these projects with higher risk. But I would advise looking for the simplest entry point, which is going to be tenant-owned homes, meaning they take care of their issues there. You know, they're leaking toilets, that's on them. Their roof, that's on them. This is unique in the world of renting to people. But then also, if you can find city sewer and city water, you can shell out hundreds of thousands of dollars if you have to replace a, you know, sewage facility or treatment plant in your park. So that is just something to be very cautious of. Beyond that, though, I would say that, yeah, the utilities is going to be the biggest one, especially what your responsibility is for as a landowner. When it comes to the homes themselves, you can source them new. So new ones, you can get a dealer's license, and they could be $50,000, where maybe retail they're $75,000. Or you can buy used. You can pick up these manufactured homes for $10,000, sometimes less if they're projects. But just remember, there's a cost in moving them, so they're quite expensive to move. Usually $10,000 or $12,000. So although, you know, they're quote unquote mobile, they don't just, you know, you can't hook them to the back of your truck and take off like you could with a camper or an RV. So much different product. But keep an eye out for those things. Utilities, water, sewer, those are your biggest expenses. And then depending on the size of the lot, you know, something as simple as like paving in the road, that's a big expense. Asphalt resurfacing is expensive if you have a large park, that just comes with it. But do a lot of due diligence, do a lot of site visits, and make sure you feel really good about it.
Thank you. For those people that want to just have, they want to invest just in one mobile home, is there any strategy that you have to share about that? Or your strategy is mainly about mobile home parks? Because, I mean, I was traveling to Miami and I saw so many houses that have mobile homes that appear to be rented. And I'm not sure if that's actually the case, or they just have some relatives live there, or they just have that as an extra storage space or whatever it is that they're doing. But I did think that was like an amazing thing to perhaps for someone someone that only has, I know, $20,000 or $30,000 to invest in, they could start really small and kind of go from there. How would they find these kind of places that have the planning permission to install, like a mobile home, for example?
Yeah, it's very unlikely that you'll find a place to where you can build your own park. That's part of the beauty of this asset class, is that cities don't want new ones. And I'm talking a park with multiple, but to your question of putting one, that's a very common thing I'm seeing right now. For someone that's a DIY investor, you can get a piece of land, you can run utilities to it, and you can source your own mobile home and then rent that out. So I would say all that, with $20,000, you would need to have the land, but let's say you own property or you were looking for a way to increase income for yourself. By all means, yeah, you can try this as an avenue for getting a rental, because you already own the land. And so it's cheaper than going out and buying new. You just have to figure out, can I do it, depending on if there's zoning restrictions or if you have complications with running utilities to them. And, you know, what is that expense and is it worth it? So, yeah, you can do it on your own property. It's similar to what people do with, you know, ADUs or accessory dwelling units. Same thing. They'll build this on their property and rent it out to get some extra income. And I love the idea because, like I said, I do this too in my personal portfolio. And so it's a good way to, you know, create more income streams for yourself.
Thank you. Tell us about private lending and how can a passive property investor leverage private lending to make more money?
Private lending has been very popular the last couple of years, for several years, but for one reason, it's sometimes real estate goes through cycles and sometimes the properties and returns may not be as anticipated. Private lending is unique because just like what you would do with a bank when you have a loan, there are set terms and a set interest rate. And so what we look for is to be able to lend. Everything we do is lending in first position, meaning we're first in line if anything goes wrong to where we can take that back. Same thing if you own a home in the US, right? Like if you don't pay your mortgage, the bank can take that back. With our private lending fund, we are the bank. And so we can do that. What I like about it, our specific model is lending to a portfolio of single family homes. These are fix and flip borrowers. So that they're trying to go borrow, flip this property, and then sell it at, you know, at a premium. Now, regardless of their profit or what people feel about flipping homes, the reason that I deem it to be safe in that particular style of lending is you are in first lien position, meaning you take it back if they don't pay. You're lending at generally a low LTV, which is loan to value, meaning if a house is worth $100,000, you're lending at around $65,000. But if that particular borrower does not pay, then you go through the standard foreclosure process to take back that asset to where it's not a complete loss. It's not like, wow, we just lost all our money in this investment. You now own a home at a discount where you have options. You can do it yourself or sell it off. So we're doing this, but at a large scale, and I'm talking hundreds of homes at once to diversify risk. And so passive investors can come in and they get the opportunity to say, look, I'm going to participate. I'll get a fixed rate of 8, 9, or 10% if they're a passive investor. And then we lend that money out at a higher rate to the borrowers, and the investor gets paid first. Our team gets paid second. Right. And we're making the money on the difference between what we lend to you and what we're paying the investors. So I like private lending. But I would tell anyone who's listening, there will be higher returns if you go into second position, meaning you're second in line behind a bank or behind other people. Everything comes with its risk and reward, and you just need to know what you're comfortable doing, because not everything works just because you sign a contract and you're promised a 20% return, but you're in second position. So lots of things have to go right. So just like we talked about in mobile home parks or buying properties, underwriting is very crucial to make sure that this can actually work. And whether you're lending into businesses or real estate, you got to make sure you understand how it works and how they have the ability to pay you back, because the person that's on the other end that wants that loan, they're hungry, they need to get it done. And so sometimes they might be a little bit bullish or overconfident on how they're going to make it work. And you know, you need to be calm, sound, don't get too excited about the return and just think, how am I going to protect my money and build slowly on that money? So it's all about safety, making sure you're comfortable making that loan.
Thank you. Is private lending similar to like a bridge loan or like a shark loan? Or is
It
it
can
kind of like
be.
lower rate than this?
Yeah, no, it can't. No, it's not. So the shark loans, they tend to get high interest rates. I also hear people angel investing as well. It's funny that term. It's like, well, maybe you're an angel, but you're a highly paid angel when you're doing angel investing. It can be similar. Like sometimes these loans are administered for what we call like bridge debt. That's to kind of get you over the finish line. So an example of that would be if somebody has something under contract and maybe some money fell short and they need $500,000 to close this property. You can set up a loan to where you're that $500,000 piece of the puzzle. You have a fixed interest rate, but then you just set it up to where, depending on the use of the property, okay, you're paid on a short, let's say it's a 9-month agreement, but it's triggered to where they have to pay you back in the event there's a construction loan or a new loan that comes in. That's part of your agreement. So you kind of protect yourself by saying, hey, when somebody else comes in, I'm out. That way you can get in, get out, make your return, and then go do it again.
Thank you. Tell us about the worst case scenarios when someone offers to be a private lender as part of your team of private lenders.
Worst case scenario is probably, making bad underwriting or judgment decisions on the front end. So, we're fortunate to where we work with a team. And like I said, I'm an investor in all this stuff myself. So, that I felt very safe with them doing it. But in lending, I hear a lot of, troubled cases out there to where, even the banks, something is established as these large banks that you all are familiar with. They go and they lend on these large properties. This happened in 2022 with apartment complexes all across the US. Prices were high, rent growth looked amazing, and here comes the bank writing, administering these loans. Well, after that, rent dropped. I'm in Austin, Texas. This happened in our local market. Rents dropped. We're now in 2026 and our rents are at 2019 levels. So all these people go in and project that rent is going to increase 3% a year and that they're great operators, so they're going to reduce their expenses. The bank takes that information and says, okay, this seems credible, let's do it. And then all of a sudden the market changes. And so what happens then is perhaps the bank lent somebody, I'm talking apartment complexes now, maybe they lent them $20 million, but that apartment complex as a whole is now only worth 15. So there's an outstanding loan, the operator's underwater, they're not going to get paid back, the bank won't get paid back their $20 million. So a lot of these discussions are happening today on with banks and with these operators, like, look, I know we did this, but it's not worth that anymore. Let's make amends. Let's figure out a way to restructure our loan. That is the biggest risk in lending. So I personally like short-term loans and stick to those. I'm talking a year and under, so that if there's a big shift in the market, you're holding on to that loan for several years to have to absorb shocks that are coming later down the road.
Thank you. Tell me about what makes mobile home parks different from traditional real estate. Why should someone consider mobile home parks versus other types of property investing?
The reason that I went into them, or there's, I talked about affordable housing earlier, and that the U.S. has an affordable housing crisis. But number two is there's a supply restraint, and so cities don't want new mobile home parks being constructed. So you'll see some developments that go up. They're generally like RV parks, which are different than mobile home parks. But the cities don't want new ones. And so you have this protected class to where you can invest in them, but there aren't going to be more of them. Or if there are a few more, they're rare and they're hard to come by. So I think there's protection for the investor to say, look, we can get solid returns in terms of affordability and protection. We know that there can't be a lower cost to go. We're comparing this generally to a 2-bedroom apartment. So let's say in a market, it's $1,200 to rent a 2-bedroom apartment. So our lot rent may be around $550 or $600. So let's say half of that cost. And the benefit to that is, number one, you're providing the most affordable, housing out there. So there's some security in that because people need fundamental, they need shelter. That's one of our basic fundamental needs. But another cool thing about the industry is the average resident or tenant stays about 14 years on average, which is unheard of. If you rent single family homes or if you've ever personally rented an apartment yourself, the norm is not 14 years. So people are getting in, staying put. And so there's some consistency with your operation, which can put everybody, investors, operators at ease, especially if you're taking good care of your people and you're taking care of the community. So those are probably the three, you know, or the affordability, ability to have the supply capped. And then also just I look for what I consider stable, safe, low risk. That for me in real estate are mobile home parks. But it doesn't just work because, hey, I want to invest in a mobile home park. That's great. Has to be a good operator that's running it, because there are a lot of operators out there that, you know, want to dive in and then realize, wow, this is hard. I'm a W-2 employee and my office job's not giving me enough time to manage this park. I'm not doing as good of a job as I thought I would. So I only look for people that do this full time and making sure that they're living, eating, breathing, you know, mobile home parks, so that I know I'm partnered with the right person.
Thank you. Tell us your 10 commandments or 10 lessons that you have learned while doing passive property investing yourself.
Okay. All right. I'm going to make these up on a whim. The first one, it's hard to trust others. So I'm an entrepreneur for 15 years. And I say I'm an entrepreneur, but I own and ran a small business in Austin. So yeah, trusting someone else is hard, especially if you're used to doing everything yourself. The second thing and for passive investing is ask lots of questions. We touched on that earlier. There are, you know, no question is stupid. If you ask a quote unquote stupid question and the person that you're considering investing with makes you feel like that was a stupid question, go to the next person. Like there are a lot of, you know, you want to work with good people. That brings me to number three. People are the most important part of this operation. Nothing works. You can have amazing underwriting, but remember, underwriting is created on a spreadsheet and a marketing brochure, so it will never be right. It's either going to be better or worse, so you want to make sure that people are being conservative. And the fourth one is stick to someone that you've built trust with, and then you still diversify, but I wouldn't... In the world of passive investing, you're going to see a lot of stuff online and you can invest with a lot of different groups. I would find a couple, right? Test a couple, maybe put in the minimum to feel, you know, to and who is, you know, going to be right for you and who won't. I've lost money before I ever started raising money and before I got into the business of raising capital and you know, group investing. And it's an awful feeling. And there are a lot of red flags that should have, or now I'm aware of, but to look out for. So that being said, everything that you're promised in the pro forma, which is like their analysis of what they think it will be, won't always work out. And so you need to be, you know, cautious there. Don't dive all in. If you're excited and you have 500 grand to work, I wouldn't just find somebody as a first time project and say, hey, here's 500 grand. Let's go get it. Because you put yourself at a lot of risk and you start a little bit slower. I know it's exciting, but slow down. The next one, let's say number five, you can do this stuff yourself if you, you can either make money or make less money. So more money or less money, it just depends on how you manage that product and what the market's like. I will say it's easier to scale in passive investing because you have the ability to put your money and diversify it into many different assets or different, they say doors in our industry, versus like if you bought a single family home, well, your property is only worth as good as the neighbors next door. And that's how valuing single family homes works. So number six, I'll segue into, you know, that's the benefit of commercial real estate, meaning multifamily, shopping centers, mobile home parks. They're all valued off the NOI, the net operating income. So you have control over what it's worth to some degree, but you don't with your house. If you think you live in an $800,000 house and your neighbor sells for $550,000, guess what? Your home's not worth $800,000. What are we on? Nine? Six? Nine? I'm trying to keep track of them here. So this is, you know, in investing in general, live beneath your means. Make sure that you can comfortably place that investment and endure loss if that, you know, nobody thinks or nobody wants to endure a loss. But you don't want to, let's say, even not in the world of investing like these larger syndications, there's more guidelines that need to be followed. But let's say a friend wants to flip a house and you've got 20,000 bucks saved up and it's all you have, and your friend says, I'm going to double that money for you. There's a lot more risk that gets involved with that. And so you need to know your risk level and make sure that when you invest, it's not going to wipe you out or wipe your savings out if anything went wrong. It shouldn't go wrong if you're working with good people, right? I rarely see in real estate the economy change it to where like you lose it all. Normally, if you're safe on the front end, you can normally hang in there and ride out the storm because it's not as volatile as like the stock market. It doesn't change. You don't wake up in the morning and say, wow, we lost 30% value in our home today, right? It doesn't work that way. So live through means, invest conservatively. I think that's all I have. I mean, just, you know.
That's wonderful. I loved all of them. Tell me one last thing. How do you steer clear of associating yourself with bad people? You did mention a little bit earlier about you basically testing them and then testing them thoroughly, doing your own due diligence before you recommend them to other people. But I'm saying for you personally, how do you avoid that you personally lose out by getting, you know, scammed or hurt, you know, by associating yourself with the wrong people? Because sometimes perhaps you're getting them to other people and then you can get hurt tremendously because you're not going to be able to pull them away from your already introduced networks.
Yes. Yeah. That's a great question. You go through as much due diligence on that individual and on the property as you can. I mean, you can only do so much. I think that where a lot of, when real estate or any business gets hard, I think the that none of us can control is, what is that person that we are invested with? Like, what are they thinking inside, and how do they operate when times get tough? Because at some point they're going to run into these difficult situations. And when that happens, that's when you tell the true character of these people. I'll say this to everybody. One general tip is get online. Let's say you meet an individual that is, that raises money for investing and you want to do it too. Ask their track record, find out, type their name in Google and, you know, type, so, you know, Ian Noble fraud, Ian Noble Ponzi. Hopefully you don't find anything. I'm using my own name here. You put in their name, right? And you want to, like, if they've done something wrong, you will find out. And so just whoever you're working with, do that. You can pay for background checks. It's rare for the passive investor to ask for this, but some people will ask the they're giving their money to or the operator for a background check. If that operator doesn't like that, then don't do business with them. It is a cost of doing business. If anybody was to come to me and say, hey, can I do a full background check on you because I'm about to give you X dollars? The answer is yes. I shouldn't be in the business if I'm not willing to do that. Maybe I'm not, you know, so these are what you need to be very comfortable with when you're doing it. And the guide I mentioned earlier that we'll like leave in the show notes, those questions are there, like on to ask and how to ask it. And then I would just advise people to take their time. I mentioned that earlier. If you have $500,000 to invest, don't just go and dump it into one thing. You want to really, if you want to get in the world of alternative investments, dabble your, you know, maybe place minimums in something, or I'll say, I call it watching from the sidelines. A lot of people in passive investing that syndicate money or run these groups, they will have mailing lists. So get on their mailing list, watch from the sidelines, see how they're communicating, see if they're like how they, you know, structure their deals or their opportunities. Are they educating you? Just, you got to make sure you're comfortable in the ecosystem, because even as a passive investor, you're going to be a partner with that person for 5-7 years, depends on what style investment you're doing. And so you need to like them, and you want to, you know, you got to feel good about them. So that's my advice on but yeah, background checks is a great tool. And I think certainly any operator that I work with, I'll tell them, hey, number one, I'm going to invest in you myself. And you know, that's a large investment, or I'm not even called a gamble, because for me, it's calculated risk. I already feel good about what they're offering. But then if I ever raise money for them and say, hey, you're going to be, you know, under the radar for, this is a trust but verify, so that I can sleep well at night saying, look, you know, I'm going to invest into Lily, and Lily has agreed to a background check, and we now are, you know, trusted partners because everything came out good and I feel good about this. And it's what you want for everything. So just my advice for anyone looking in, you know, and with all the stuff that's on the internet, because there's a lot of smoke out there on the internet on how you're going to get rich. And it's not a get rich fast game. This is a get rich slow game. And that's why I like it.
Thank you. Tell us where property investors can connect with you.
When you download the cheat sheet that we'll provide, it's, you know, what to ask before investing passively. You'll get into my, you know, my email list and network, so we can connect there. You can also visit my website, which is runsteadyinvestments.com.
Thank you.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.